Hey, you're listening to From Cover to Real, the podcast started by a virgin who can't even drive. Welcome to From Cover to Real. It's actually the podcast where we compare books to their movie adaptations. And I'm your host, Alicia Maruri. Been on a break for a little bit, but we're back and we're ready to roll. And today,
better than ever.
Yeah. Today I'm joined by my sister, Lindsay Hannon. Woo!
Yay! A very special guest.
Very special. Yeah. And today we're going to discuss a beloved classic book. Some say it was revolutionary. I read a little article about it where they were comparing the author to Proust, which I've only ever heard of Proust. It's Proust, right? From Gilmore Girls. I don't read that. And James Joyce and other authors like that. So they called this author a revolutionary. And she's one of the most famous women in the literary world, I would say, in literary history. And we're talking about one of this book's movie counterparts, because it has a few.
But this one is the best one.
Yeah. And it's widely considered by us to be a perfect movie.
Widely considered.
If you haven't guessed by now, we're discussing Jane Austen's Emma and Amy Heckerling's Clueless.
The best movie adaptation of a book of all time.
Yeah, it's good. It's funny because if you were going to rate it on, like, how close they got everything to how it happens in the book, probably be like a B, I'd say.
Maybe even a C+.
But it's a perfect movie. So we'll talk about that. Yeah. So Emma was written in 1815 by Jane Austen. And when did Clueless come out?
95.
Stars Alicia Silverstone and Brittany Murphy, Breckin Meyer.
And the great Paul Rudd.
Yeah, and Paul Rudd. And also Stacey Dash and I'm blanking his name. He was on Scrubs. He's hilarious. Donald Faison. A lot of people. Oh, and Justin Walker. Also, Wallace Shawn is in it. Mm-hmm. He's hilarious. A lot of a really good cast.
Yep. That's what made it such a great movie. They really picked a very strong cast.
Yeah. I'm just, like, looking at the cast. I'm like, wow. Okay. So, what are your first thoughts about the movie book adaptation thing?
I think the reason that it does so well is because it's in a modern setting, and instead of trying to be like, oh, here's the book as a movie, it's like, here's the idea of this book taking place in modern day. And so the story itself of someone that's meddling in things she shouldn't be meddling in and is totally clueless about people and their feelings and life in general really works in a high school setting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it translates so well. And I think that's why it's so good, even though it's not, like, it deviates a lot from the book.
Right.
But that's why it works.
Yeah. I have to agree. I think putting it in a modern setting was genius, because it's a book that people still love to read in, like, you know, There's still movies made about it. But I think it'll help. It helps you relate to it more.
Yeah.
Like, it's timeless in that way. The source material is. Because people, although our technology has changed, people have been acting the same way for a long time.
Hundreds of years.
Yeah.
I just wish I could do it with Cher's closet.
I know. I know. Just that computer thing where it can show you the clothes on you and it's like, that's ugly.
Yeah.
That would be nice. Okay. So how do you, well, you, I guess you said it changed, but overall, like, the main points of the source material, how well do you think the movie covered it?
I think it does a really good job of staying true to the essence of the book. Yeah. I think Cher is, like, a perfect Emma. Like, you update Emma and make her a teenager in a Beverly Hills high school, and she's Cher to a T.
Yeah. What about all the other characters?
So when I was reading and then watching, I was trying to figure out who was who, since so many of the names are different.
Right.
So, like, Stacey Dash's character, Dee, I think is supposed to be Cher's sister and her former nanny, Mrs. Weston.
Mm-hmm.
And
I Travis think... Travis's... Mr. Martin.
Yeah. And then Ty is Harriet. Josh is Elton. Mr. Knightley. Elton is right. Elton.
What? Cher's dad is Emma's dad. What do you think, though, like, of the teachers she gets together? Was that supposed to be, like, her getting Mr. and Mrs. Weston together?
I think it was, but then because... the relationship she had with them was so distant. I felt like they took that relationship that she had with Mrs. Weston and meshed it into her relationship with Dee.
Yeah.
Who was just her best friend, like Mrs. Weston was.
Right. I always thought it was kind of weird at the end how they were all the bridesmaids.
I know. I was like, doesn't she have any friends?
I mean, yeah, I would have invited them because they, like, brought us together, you know,
yeah,
in their way. But I would have been like, oh, yeah, this 16-year-old student of mine was my bridesmaid.
Yeah.
It's a different world, I guess.
And that's the one thing that, you know, when I first saw the movie and I'm like, I probably didn't see it right when it came out because I was 10 years old. But, you know, in my younger days, when I first saw it, didn't think anything of it. But now as I watch it as an adult, I was like, why is she her bridesmaid?
Yeah. It's okay, though. Yeah. It's still a perfect movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then how do you, like, do you think Dee was a good representation of Mrs. Weston and Emma's sister? Is it Isabella?
Yeah, Isabella.
I mean, she was. They were both mostly in the book just to, like, feed into Emma's
cluelessness,
and, like,
they boosted her ego.
Yeah, they both just like, oh, I think this thing, but you think that, so you're probably right. Because
yeah, I mean, I think Dee really does that. Like, she encourages Ty to let Cher give her a makeover because Cher's so good at it. And then she encourages her to go after Christian, who's, you know, Frank Churchill in the book.
Because
mm-hmm. she's just like, he's perfect for you.
Right.
So I think she's always encouraging Cher and treating Cher like, you know, you're the greatest, you're the best.
Right.
At the same time being, like, very strong-minded herself and, like, you know, independent woman. It's her man in his place kind of thing.
Yeah. And then you said you didn't think, at first, you didn't think the dad was a good representation of Emma's dad in the book.
Well, yeah, in the book, he's just like the settled hypochondriac who doesn't want anybody to do anything. And then in the movie, he's an angry lawyer. Maybe as a lawyer, I just took offense.
Aren't all lawyers angry?
And sad hypochondriacs? Yep, that's me.
Yeah, I thought it fit because I was trying to imagine what would be the modern equivalent of someone who doesn't want you to do anything. Like, don't eat cake, don't go out in the rain, don't go out in the sun.
Don't eat dinner.
Don't have a party. Don't get married.
My favorite is don't eat dinner.
Yeah. And I was just like, I think it makes sense because he's still very overprotective of Cher. He threatens Christian and he like has a curfew for her. You know, he's overprotective and still loving. And then Cher still has to take care of him. She feels this obligation to him.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a good...
He does, because like, he still spoils her. Because he is one of the other people, like, Emma's dad is one of the ones that's like, Emma has no fault in his eyes.
Right.
And that's how the dad is in the movie still.
Like, yeah.
Cher is faultless.
It's funny when he congratulates her on... arguing her way into better grades.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, good job, or whatever. Yeah. I forget exactly what he says, but he's proud of her for that. And I'm like, that's really funny.
Yeah.
But it was a different time in the 90s, like how grading happened. It's not the same as today.
Yeah. And I think especially in a wealthy school, it's probably just a very different world.
Yeah. That's funny. What do you think of Travis being a stoner? Mr. Martin's a farmer. I'm kind of seeing a correlation there.
Well, it's funny because in the book, Mr. Martin is a very respectable person, but Emma sees him as beneath her because he's not part of high society. And so I think if you just look at Mr. Martin and Travis, you're like, that doesn't make sense, unless you're Alicia and think that all farmers are potheads. but I think in terms of, like, looking at the high school, the posh, rich Beverly Hills high school setting where Cher is this gorgeous, popular girl, and he's, like, you know, the flunky stoner, that it makes sense because she's going to view him as beneath her. And not good enough for her friend Ty.
Right.
So it translates well because of the setting that they put the story in.
Yeah, I agree. And in the end, he does get his redemption. I don't think all farmers are potheads. I think it's like you grow stuff. He grows wheat. I don't know. In my head, it made sense. And then I think that Ty was a really good interpretation of Harriet, because she just kind of goes along with whatever Cher says, just like Harriet did. And she's just kind of flighty and, like, she never really liked Elton, either Harriet or Ty. But Cher/Emma just put that into her, like, oh, Elton likes you. Once you hear someone likes you, you're like, maybe, but Ty just took it to the extreme because she wanted to, Ty and Harriet both wanted to please Emma Cher.
Yeah, they just wanted to be part of her world.
Yeah. So I think Brittany Murphy was also the perfect person to play Ty.
She was perfect in that role.
Yeah.
Brittany Murphy.
R.I.P. Okay. Any other characters you want to talk about? I guess we could talk about Mr. Knightley and Josh.
Should we talk about Christian first?
Oh, yeah, probably.
I mean, we were discussing this before, how they made him gay. And I just really think that that was the perfect way to pull that off, because obviously, as a high school kid, you can't have, like, a secret engagement. And even, like, a secret girlfriend would be sort of dumb and not make any sense.
Right.
So, just being like, well, he seems like this perfect guy, but then you find out he's gay, is, I think, the best way to translate that to the high school setting.
Yeah. Especially because in the 90s, then, he probably would have felt more compelled to keep that a secret. Just thinking about, you know, you're coming off the AIDS epidemic and people were not very accepting of gay people. So it was a good way to make you think about it, I think. Like, what are people not accepting in modern times compared to, not ancient times, but less modern times?
But to 1815 times.
Yeah. It's so funny to think, like, oh, I had to hide who I was engaged to. Like, you're the Hatfields and McCoys or something.
Yeah, I still never really understood why they did that. But
because his aunt, who was raising him, Frank Churchill's aunt, wanted him to marry some high society girl, but Jane was bound to be just a teacher. Just a teacher. Rude.
Just a teacher.
Rude. I take offense to that as a former teacher. the rest of her life. Like, she had no
status.
Dowry. She had nothing. She was an orphan who lived with a talker. Well, she didn't really live with her aunts.
She didn't live with her aunts, and that her aunt and her grandma.
She
and
lived
that's why,
with,
to me, it just, like, didn't make sense, because I'm like, well, she lives with these really wealthy people that are probably going to leave her something.
But they didn't. That was the thing. They only paid for her schooling. That's all they could do for her.
Yeah, I feel like they're probably going to leave her something anyway when they die.
They might. Except for now that she has Frank, she doesn't
need
them.
They don't need
to. So, that was the thing. I think, and his aunt seemed really controlling. Like,
yeah, she did keep him from his father for
ever
his whole life. So,
it was weird. Well, yeah, it was weird. Yeah.
She's a snob.
She's dead.
So we got rid of her in the movie.
I thought that was clever in the movie, too, how they said, oh, well, he has to spend, you know, fall, winter with his dad in this city, and then he'll come here late for half the other half of the year. And that's how they did the thing where Frank Churchill was, like, living with his aunt, but his dad was here. Mm-hmm. That was a confusing story, too. I was like, you, Jane, kind of are stretching that one. Because I kind of agree with Mr. Knightley. Like, Frank Churchill was a grown man. If he had just been like, I'm going to see my dad, he could have done that.
Yeah, but I think that was the thing you learn in the book, is Frank Churchill's not a horrible person, but he is kind of a flake.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of mean to Jane. And mm-hmm. It's like, why are you being mean to her if you're so in love with her and want, you're planning on marrying her? You know?
Well, yeah, because she almost broke it off with him because of all that. Yeah.
So,
Jane's
kind of,
like,
dumb.
Jane's like, I know what I'm worth.
Yeah, and she's too good for him.
That's not it. Yeah. Okay. Okay, now do you want to talk about Josh and Mr. Knightley?
Yeah. I just wanted to get the secondary characters out of the way.
You're right.
Before we talk about Paul Rudd.
Paul
Rudd. I mean,
Rudd.
Mr. Knightley.
Mm-hmm. Paul Rudd. He should have, like, a little jingle like that.
His own theme song.
He's Paul
Rudd. Paul Rudd.
He never ages.
He's Paul Rudd. He could play Mr. Knightley in the 2020 movie.
Look at us. Yeah. Okay. I think it was really clever how they made him her ex-stepbrother.
Yeah.
Instead of her brother-in-law's brother. Which wouldn't have been a stretch to do either. But I think that maybe would have been too many characters for a movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, since they got rid of her sister, and Dee was kind of her sister, he would have to have been the brother of...
Murray.
Of Murray. And I think then it's like, well, why would she really be that close to Murray's brother?
Yeah.
You know? Because she doesn't even really seem that close to Murray.
Right.
She's just close to Dee. And so making it like her ex-stepbrother, so he used to live in the house with her, so she knew him pretty well. And it seemed like the other redeeming quality of her dad was, like Josh says, that, you know, Mel's the only person who's ever cared about me.
Right.
And that's why he keeps coming around.
Mm-hmm.
And also because he's in love with Cher. But
I don't think he knew it either, though.
For a while, yeah. When do you think... glad they made him younger, though, because I'm still creeped out by the fact in the book, Knightley's like, I've loved you since you were 13. And since he's, like, 16 years older than her in the book, I'm like, that's creepy, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, I like Knightley better than, like, Mr. Darcy, but I'm like, it's a little bit creepy.
Truly.
So.
Truly. Overall, I'd say the character interpretations to the movie, I'd give it a solid, like, A for me. Because I think they're all just really good.
And even Amber is Mrs. Elton.
Yeah. And she's, like, hardly in the movie, but she does make a big impact.
Yeah.
Where you're like, wow, she's more snobby and shallow than Cher.
Yeah. And, like, really abrasive.
Yeah.
But they still hang out with her sometimes. So that's the thing, is, like, why do you keep her around if you can't stand her? But it works, because I feel like people do that in high school.
Oh, all the time. All the time. For me, I think the movie was much more entertaining than the book. To me, the book dragged at parts. When I saw it, it was like, I listened to it, and it was like 15 hours. I was like, really? 15 hours. So then I started listening to it, and I was like, wow. This is longer than it needs to be.
Could have been half as long.
Yeah, there is one half as long. Well, it's like the radio dramatization with Emma Thompson and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think you listened to that as a refresher because you've already read Emma.
I started listening to it, and then I just found the book again on Audible and just listened to it on like 1.5 speed.
Yeah, that's what I did too.
Which made it less than 15 hours long.
Yeah. I do like that they left out Mrs. Bates and Jane, because even though Mrs. Bates gave you clues to as what was going on with Frank and Jane, I felt like that wasn't really necessary in the movie. Mm-hmm. And those were kind of some of the parts that were dragging in the book, because she just talked and talked and talked. So.
Yeah. But I mean, in the book, she is the catalyst for Emma to realize she's kind of a snob because she's mean to her at that party, and then Knightley yells at her.
True. Do you think there's anything the movie totally messed up about the book?
No.
Me either. It's a perfect movie. And honestly, there's usually at least one thing, like even... you know, in really good movies like Harry Potter or whatever. I mean, I guess Harry Potter's not really good movies, but...
we just love the books so much.
Like, people love the third Harry Potter movie.
That doesn't make any sense.
And I'm like, that's the worst one. But okay. Anyways, I digress. Okay, so I'm just going to ask you, what do you like better, the book or the movie?
That's a hard question for me, because even though Clueless is based off of Emma, it's hard for me to compare them because the movie is still so different from the book that it's not to me like when I watch a Harry Potter movie and I'm like, the book's obviously better than this. It's just like, the book is the book and the movie is the movie. So I don't know. I think, because like I like Emma. I think I even like it better than Pride and Prejudice. But, I mean, Jane Austen can be kind of a slow read sometimes. And I think that was just like the style of her time.
Yeah.
So I guess it's easy for me to not really hold that against her. But the movie is faster paced and more fun and funny. Like the freeway scene is so classic.
Iconic.
Yeah.
And don't we all feel like that? Like the first time you drove on the freeway, that's what I was thinking of. Like in Driver's Ed, I had to get on the freeway and I was screaming inside. You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah.
I feel like any teenager who's driving will get that scene. Relate
for
to
forever
it.
And ever.
It's so funny. I love it. For me, it's the movie, just because I don't think I'll ever read Emma again. It was just for the reasons I already said. But I will probably watch Clueless at least annually. Maybe more.
Every day for the rest of my life.
And it's funny because it's not my favorite movie ever. It's probably in my top movies. But Jurassic Park is my favorite movie. But I wouldn't even call Jurassic Park a perfect movie. Mm-hmm. I just really love it. And I love dinosaurs. So that's probably why. But it's good at scaring you. Anyways, we already talked about Jurassic Park.
Yeah, go back and listen to that one.
In our very first episode.
Yep.
So, but Clueless is a perfect movie. It doesn't mean it's my favorite, but I do love it. And I do know people who it is their favorite movie. Mm-hmm. Why do you think books get made into movies? Just in a more broader, in a more broad sense, not specifically just Clueless.
Well, I think there's a few reasons. I think when people read books, they imagine the story in their mind, and some people with the time and talent and money want to bring that to life. And then people just want to capitalize. Like, you write a book and everyone's reading it, so you know they're going to go see the movie. Like, I went and saw every Harry Potter movie, and I like them, even though I like the books better, but I still went and gave them my money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think people make books into movies, is to capitalize. They know they're going to profit off of it.
Yeah.
And then some people, it just feeds their creative juices. Like, I think, you know, like Amy Heckerling just taking this book that's been around for 200 plus years and being like, I think this story would even work in a modern setting.
Mm-hmm.
So she did it. And it did work.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
I agree. I think the first reason, like, that a major studio especially would pick up a book and make it into a movie is just capitalizing on, well, you've already got this big fan base. Like Harry Potter, Hunger Games, Divergent, which they really messed up that deal.
Yeah.
But anyways, but also I think someone's reading a book And they're like, just like you said, they have this vision of how they can make it into a film. And it doesn't have to be an exact copy, but it's their interpretation of the emotions the book made them feel, maybe the themes. I think a good example of, like, contrasting those two ideas would be, like, oh, let's capitalize on something would be Ella Enchanted.
Let's not bring that up.
We have an episode about Ella Enchanted, but they're like...
You can hear all about how much I hate that movie.
The funny thing is, I like the movie, but it is nothing like the book.
Yeah.
And so they were...
Which is why I hate it.
It was purely just... This has a fan base. We're going to get all these people to see the movie. Let's make a movie about it.
And it doesn't matter that they're going to leave enraged. We'll already have their money by then.
Exactly. And then there's people like Amy Heckerling makes Clueless. This book's been around forever. Yes, there's multiple adaptations of Emma.
I think it might be the first one. It came out before the Gwyneth Paltrow version did.
Yeah, I don't know. I always assume the BBC has done one before. But I haven't researched that carefully this time. Just because they always do, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
But I think they were probably... Well, anyways. Yeah. She just imagined it how it could work. And it did. And it wasn't like... Like, it is capitalizing on, yeah, people love Emma, but also it wasn't because it was never marketed that way.
Mm-hmm.
As this is an Emma adaptation. I don't know if people would have been so keen on it. They might have turned on it if it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
When did, like, Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet and the Julia Stiles Othello one.
I think those all came out after Clueless.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not as good.
I didn't ever see O. I just heard of it.
They're not as good.
Yeah, you talked yesterday. You were talking about the Hamlet one.
Yeah, that one is, like, really dark. I mean, Hamlet's a dark story, but... I think the thing is, so I like the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet because it's very stylized,
mm-hmm.
which is just Baz Luhrmann's way. But a lot of them, they try to make it modern and then they keep the Shakespearean language, which is just a creative choice that they make, I think. But the reason that Clueless works so well is because it's just a story. And even, like, when I told my husband we were going to do this podcast, and he was like, which one are you doing? And I said, Emma in the movie Clueless. He had no idea that Clueless was based off of Emma. And he's not really the demographic for Clueless, but I think a lot of people were unaware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they'd already read the book. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
But it was... I think that's why it does a lot better, I think.
Yeah, I don't think I knew until... way later. After, I mean, I'd seen the movie hundreds of times, probably, and I didn't realize. But I think Clueless proves that it can work that way, and it did also in She's the Man and Twelfth Night.
Twelfth Night.
I'm trying to, you know, teach that stuff to Adriancito.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, with spelling and stuff. So I have to say, like, every sound really enunciated in every word. I'm like, that's a hard one, but I bet he could spell it. 12th. But I'm messing it up. 12th. Yeah. Anyways.
Okay. So I found this article to see what all the versions of Emma are. And I guess that the one with Gwyneth Paltrow came out in 96, and A&E had their own version that came out in 96 as well. And then there's the new one that came out last year, and Clueless came out in 95. And they ranked Clueless as the best one
of
all of them, which is true. But, I mean, unless this list is just missing an an adaptation of it. Those are all the ones that have been done so far. So Clueless sort of kicked it off.
Yeah.
And it's the best one, according to Screen Rant. So there you go.
Well, I love that because it's true. Although I've not seen any other adaptation of Emma. So
I've seen the Gwyneth Paltrow one, and it's good. But I like Clueless better.
I've heard of a lot of people really like that one, so
yeah,
I'm sure it's good, but I don't know. Okay, any other final thoughts?
Long live Clueless. Long live Paul Rudd.
What's your favorite Clueless quote?
Probably, you're a virgin who can't even drive.
That's a really good one. I don't even know. Like, I really like that one, too.
Or what does her dad say to Christian when he comes to pick her up?
I can't remember exactly.
About, like, I have a shovel and no one will find your body.
Yeah.
I feel like every dad in 95 that was dragged to see that movie then wrote that line down and saved it.
Yeah. I like it when he's like, do you like Billie Holiday? And she's like, oh yeah, I love him. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Should we leave a note? That's another one I like.
Yeah, and they should have. So, I'm feeling the driver's ed instructor. That was a teachable moment.
Yep.
And he
missed it.
He messed up. He dropped the ball. So, I like how she says that her and Dion are best friends because they both know what it's like to have people be jealous of them for being so beautiful and popular or something like that. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, we're best friends because we both know what it's like to have people be jealous of us or something like that.
I think one thing that we talked about yesterday too was why Jane Austen wrote Emma.
Oh yeah.
And I thought that was good. So Jane Austen said that she wanted to make a character that no one would like but her. And then she came up with Emma. And then everybody, I mean, Emma's this really popular book now. And I just feel like it's because Emma is, she's a spoiled rich girl and she is clueless, but she's not heartless.
Mm-hmm.
And so, even though she's flawed, it's like, she means well with people. Like, she wants Harriet to have a good match and get married and everything. So, yeah, she can be kind of shallow and spoiled, but she has a good heart. And I think that's why, I think it helps remind people that nobody is just one thing, you know? Like, Emma's a whole person.
Right.
So that's why she's likable.
Yeah. I agree. That, like, it's okay to make mistakes, but you can still be a good person in the end, like, overall. Yeah. That's why I, like, try to teach my kids, too. Like, I'm trying to move away from saying, oh, that's a bad guy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's just someone who's making a bad choice.
Yeah.
Because I don't want him to associate, like, oh, that's a bad person with.
Right.
That's a person who's making an unfortunate decision. I think that's like a distinction that our society needs more and more.
Yeah.
So maybe people should read Emma more. I think that's a reason, too, people like the book and Clueless is you can see yourself in the character.
Yeah.
I do have to agree it's revolutionary to make your main character back then not this perfect, almost like the anti-hero, but not the anti-hero. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Usually.
She's not demure.
Yeah.
Emma kind of has the run of the town there, really.
Right.
And I think that Jane Austen would love Clueless.
I agree. Because it's perfect.
I think she'd be really happy to see how timeless her story is.
Yeah. I concur. I think that's when you're writing something, I think that's a hope you have, like, that people can enjoy it for ages.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I don't really have anything else to say. This wasn't really a controversial book and movie. But.
Nope. It wasn't the time. I mean, Jane Austen, I think, had to write under a pseudonym pretty much her whole career, so. Maybe that's why there was always at least one character named Jane.
She's like, this is me. Jane is always like someone kind of nice too and shy.
And perfect and beautiful.
Yeah.
She's not conceited, you guys. She just knows who she is.
Right. It's fine. She knows her worth. That's mm-hmm. good.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening.
As if.
Gag me with a spoon. What's the other one? I'm totally bugging.
Or when Amber would do the W.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, man. So classic 90s.
Yeah, it's the best.
You know what? And you would think that Gen Z, they could watch Clueless, and aside from like the cell phones, that's like what they're all into now. Everything yeah. on Clueless aesthetic. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we watched Jumanji the other night, which we should do Jumanji for the podcast.
Yeah, we should.
But the original one. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all the fashion is the same as it is now.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Everything just comes full circle.
So, yeah. Okay, well, thanks for listening to From Cover to Real. If you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a good rating. If you didn't, just leave.
But still tell all your friends to come listen to it.
Yeah. If you have any suggestions for book and movie adaptations you'd like us to do, you can send us an email at fromcovertoreal@gmail.com. Or you can go to our blog. Okay, we're part of the Three Wings Design blog. You could go there and leave us a comment on any post. We'll see it, don't worry. But there is going to be a post associated with this episode. Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah, or find us on Facebook or Instagram.
Instagram, Facebook. That's about it. So, or if you have any other thoughts about Emma or any of the other book movie adaptations we've done, tell us about that too, and we'll give you a shout out. Tell everyone what you thought. Okay. Thank you. Goodbye. Good night. Have a nice life.
Good night and good luck.